translation by his and purport by his divine grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada Ki. Please also describe the expansions of different sacrifices and the paths of mystic powers, analytical study of knowledge, and devotional service, all with their respective regulations. So if you can please repeat after me, please also describe the expansions of different sacrifices and the paths of mystic powers, analytical study of knowledge, and devotional service, all with their respective regulations and purport. The word tantrum is significant herein. Sometimes tantrum is misunderstood to be the black spiritual science of materialistic persons engaged in sense gratification. But here tantra means the science of devotional service compiled by Srila Narada Muni. One can take advantage of such regulative explanations of the path of devotional service and make progressive advancement in the devotional service of the Lord. Sankhya philosophy is the basic principle of acquiring knowledge, as will be explained by the sage Maitreya. The Sankhya philosophy enunciated by Kapila Dev, the son of Devahuti, is the real source of knowledge about the Supreme Truth. Knowledge not based on the Sankhya philosophy is mental speculation and can yield no tangible profit. Jai Shri Prabhupada Ki. So, in this verse, it's Vidura inquiring from Maitreya, and it's continue on these further questions. So, in this verse, it speaks specifically about the expansions of different sacrifices, the paths of mystic powers, analytical study of knowledge, and devotional service, all with their respective regulations. So everything in terms of the Vedic scriptures has certain injunctions and regulations. So this is true with all the different paths. So first of all, they ask about different sacrifices. So the expansions of different sacrifices. I wasn't really sure what in terms of expansions mean originally, but I found a good verse in the Bhagavad Gita where Sri Prabhupada very much elaborates on all the different sacrifices and he sums them up very nicely. So I'm just going to read his purport. So this is chapter 4, text number 25. Some yogis perfectly worship the demigods by offering different sacrifices to them, and some offer sacrifices in the fire of the Supreme Brahman. As described above, a person engaged in discharging duties in Krishna consciousness is also called a perfect yogi or a first-class mystic. But there are others also who perform similar sacrifices in the worship of demigods, and still others who sacrifice to the Supreme Brahman or the impersonal feature of the Supreme Lord. There are different kinds of sacrifices in terms of different categories. Should such different categories of sacrifice by different types of performers only superficially demark varieties of sacrifice? Factually, sacrifice means to satisfy the Supreme Lord, Vishnu, who is also known as Yajna. All the different varieties of sacrifice can be placed within two primary divisions, namely, sacrifice of worldly possessions and sacrifice in pursuit of transcendental knowledge. Those who are in Krishna consciousness sacrifice all material possessions for the satisfaction of the Supreme Lord, while others who want some temporary material happiness sacrifice their material possessions to satisfy demigods such as Indra, the sun god, etc. And others who are impersonalists sacrifice their identity by merging into the existence of impersonal Brahman. The demigods are powerful living entities appointed by the Supreme Lord for the maintenance and supervision of all material functions. So, yeah, so that'll just, it continues on, but that basically describes what is actually sacrifices. So those who are in Krishna consciousness, they basically sacrifice everything, material possessions and everything, for Krishna. But those who are on the different parts of the Vedas, they sacrifice material possessions and so on, but to the demigods. So this is fruit of activity. Those who are simply, they want something tangible materially. So, and then there's the paths of mystic powers. Srila Prabhupada, he describes that there's three different types of transcendentalists. So these are the jnanis, the yogis, and the devotees. So in terms of the mystic powers, this is the path of Astanga Yoga. So in Astanga Yoga, there's eight different limbs. These are yama, niyama. So yama is like prohibitions. Niyama is like things that we adhere to. And then there's asana. So these are like the postures. Srila Prabhupada often referred to them as like gymnastics. So these are like the yoga postures. Then there's pranayama, which is basically breathing with the inward breath. So this is, I used to practice like pranayama as well, but I didn't commit to it without fully trying to find my path. But these are different yogis, and by the practice of pranayama, they can increase their duration of life. So this is with what's called the inward airs, the prana and apana. So these are different airs. One is like going upwards, and the other is going down. So the prana is the one that goes down. And then these yogis, these mystic yogis, they get to a stage of what's called, where they actually manipulate the airs, the inward and outgoing airs. And they get them to kind of to meet together, and ultimately to they stop. So at this stage, it's called Kumbhaka Yoga. And it's through this stage that these yogis, that they can actually prolong their lives. So these are the yogis who can live for maybe 300 or 700 years. So this is all through the process of the breath and so on. So yeah, these different yogis, they do a lot of austerity, and they can become powerful in terms of a material sense. They develop these different mystic cities, and all these different cities, they're still on the material platform. It's simply just manipulating the material world. So these different mystic cities, they can still be actually part of devotional service. Sri Prabhupada described that jnana yoga can become astanga yoga when the yogi or the mystic starts to actually to meditate on the Supreme. So at this time then it becomes astanga yoga. So these different mystic yogis, we have to be careful because they may not have, you know, devotional aspirations. And some of these mystic yogis, they're the ones who can, try and actually to take advantage of others, to perform certain things which may seem incredible from the mundane sense, and then to fool people into actually thinking that they were God. So we have an example of this in our from our parampara, which is Bhaktivinod Thakur. So Bhaktivinod Thakur, I can't remember the actual name of the yogi, if he was Vishakshena, yeah. So he claimed to be Mahavishnu. And he would perform very, what seems like wondrous things. But he would actually, perform even things which are very, seem very good, like healings, other things which, produce fire and all these kind of things. And he also had this kind of awareness that he could actually, when Bhaktivinod Thakur came to arrest him, he said, you can tell your guards to come out from behind the trees. So he had this, this awareness and perception. But ultimately, it was still all just simply material. And ultimately, he was arrested. And one of the prison guards had read that the yogis keep their power in their hair. So he actually he cut off the hair of this yogi, and I think this yogi, he had gone maybe 40 days or something without food or water. So when his hair was cut off, he just simply collapsed. So that power which was sustaining him was no more. Also, in the purport, Srila Prabhupada mentions tantrum. So tantrum can often, as Srila Prabhupada mentions, it can be confused with the black art. So we can see that in this modern world, what has actually become known as tantra has actually been misused. So, there's different types of tantra, and ultimately, in the modern sense, it's simply just misused for sense gratification. And these are actual, there's different types of tantra. Srila Prabhupada, in a conversation with this young practitioner, he said, actually, there's two different, tantra is in two different aspects. One is rajasic and the other is sattvic. So, and there's different types of tantra. One is the actual, there's a Vaishnav tantra. One is Lord Shiva as well. And then the other is the actual Shaktas. So these are like Goddess Kali. And so this can be actually completely misused, and it's actually sense gratification. So it's sense gratification in the veil of spirituality. And actually, those who actually claim that they will, that they will achieve perfection, no matter how much scriptures they have, ultimately, it's actually misinterpretation, and it's actually a Mayavad, where they believe that they will actually become the supreme, and it's actually offensive to the Supreme Lord. So in terms of, I mentioned pranayama, then there's pratyahara. Pratyahara, that's the withdrawal of the senses. And then there's dharana. This is like, there's a dharana, and then there's, I'm trying to think of dharana, it's more like more concentration. Then there's dhyana. Dhyana is complete concentration, but then there's samadhi, and that's full absorption. I'm trying to recall 100% what dharana is again, if I'm not sure if anyone can remember. But ultimately the Ashtanga yoga path is something which is good, but it's not something which is so practical in this day and age. It said in the Bhagavad Gita, Kleshodika Taraste Sham Havyakta Shakta Shetasam Havyakta Hir Gatir Dukam Tehavat Purabat Piti. So for those on the path of impersonal liberation, advancement is very troublesome. So we may say that these Ashtanga yogis, they may be ultimately they'll become devotees, but generally those who are involved in this kind of meditation, that they're ultimately believe that they'll merge into the supreme and so on. But then through the actual meditation on the super soul and the Lord within, that they'll actually become devotees. So those who actually develop mystic cities, we have examples in the Srimad Bhagavatam that in Siddha Loka, the residents of Siddha Loka were offering prayers to the Supreme Lord, and if we can remember, it was basically the prayers that he offered were prayers what seemed like pure devotional service. So Srila Prabhupada remarks about that in his purport, that those who were actually the residents of Siddha Loka, they appeared to be pure devotees. So then there's the next path, which is analytical study of knowledge. So in this world, we're all conditioned living entities. We're covered over by the three modes of material nature, and we're prone to the characteristics of a flawed personality. So that is that we have imperfect senses. There's, when I think of imperfect senses, I actually think of my grandmother. She was a very loving lady, and when I used to visit her, she was quite elderly, and if it was raining, I wouldn't want to go and visit her, because she'd make a fuss. She'd say, "Oh, you're all wet, you poor thing," and you know, she'd try and she said in a, you know, she had a small kitchen or sitting area and a big stove in there that was very warm, and she would want to hang my jacket over the rain. So I remember then, you know, it wasn't raining or anything, and so then I went to visit her, and it was actually, yeah, it was just a bit cold outside, but then she had to, you know, to touch my jacket and says, "Oh, you poor thing, you're all damp." So I had to take off my jacket as well. And something that comes to mind is that even though, yeah, it's very sweet as well, but yeah, we all have imperfect senses. So that's simply one aspect of a conditioned soul, that we have imperfect senses, and we're prone to illusion. We can make mistakes, and we have the propensity to cheat. So, this is due to the three modes of material nature. So when we become free from those three modes, Shri Shri Radhika Kulananda Ki, Shri Shri Sitaram Laxman Hanuman Ki, Shri Shri Gauranitai Ki. When we become free from those three modes of material nature, then we can become free from the imperfections of being a conditioned soul. So it's the philosophy of Sankhya Yoga. That philosophy is something which it's called analytical analyzation. So it's something which studies the material energy, and we can see everything in its construction, this whole material universe. So it was actually the Supreme Lord who was Kapilya Dev, and he was the one who actually gave us this philosophy of Sankhya Yoga. So Lord Kapilya Dev, he advented in Satya Yuga. You might recall that he's actually one of the 12 Mahajans also. And Lord Kapilya Dev, first of all, it started out with Kardama Muni and Devahuti. So Kardama Muni was a great yogi, and he was requested by Lord Brahma that he wanted him to marry, to have progeny. And Kardama Muni, he was doing a lot of austerities. So he did austerities for 1,000 years. And eventually then the Supreme Lord manifested, Lord Vishnu. And it's a place that's known as Bindu Sarorav. I'm not sure if it's pronounced Sarova, or it's spelled like Sarorav. So Lord Vishnu, he was very delighted to see Kardama Muni, and tears came from his eyes. And this is why, you know, into that place called Bindu Sarorav. So it's very much a holy place. And that Kardama Muni, he got all, you know, the blessings of the Supreme Lord, and then he actually decided that, you know, it was time to get married from the request of Lord Brahma. And so there was a particular prospective wife who was known as Devahuti. So in Devahuti, she is the daughter of Swayambhuva Manu, and she was known as being someone who was very special and all the good qualities. And there was, I can't remember the name, but there was one particular sage in an airplane, and he was flying overhead, and she was playing with a ball on the balcony, and he actually fell out of the airplane. And so she was also someone who was very attractive. And so Swayambhuva Manu, and they arranged for the marriage of Devahuti to Kardama Muni. And Devahuti, she had already inwardly accepted Kardama Muni. So eventually, they got married, and they did a lot of austerities, and eventually they had nine children. So, these were nine daughters. And then after that, actually, through the blessings of the Lord, they had a son, and this son was Lord Kapila. So it might seem a bit hard to conceive, but after Lord Kapila was born, that's the time when Kardama Muni decided to renounce householder life to focus on the Supreme Lord. So the Supreme Lord was already his son, but he decided that because to set the example that the right thing for him to do was to actually to renounce and become a traveler, to travel around. So Devahuti, she had the Supreme Lord as her son, Lord Kapila. And Lord Kapila was completely perfect, and Devahuti, she felt very fallen, and she wanted this knowledge from Kapila, Lord Kapila. So this is where Lord Kapila instructs the Vedic knowledge and that of Sankhya Yoga. So Sankhya Yoga, it speaks about the different, the universe. So this universe begins ultimately in the unmanifested stage, which is eternal. So this unmanifested stage is known as Pradhan. So Pradhan is the unmanifested, undifferentiated aggregate of the material existence. So these are all the different material elements in an undifferentiated form. So this Pradhan, as I said in the Bhagavad Gita, Aham Sarvasya Pravabho Mataha Sarvam Pratite Iti Matvya Bhajante Imam Buddhabhava Samanvitaha. So all spiritual and material worlds emanate from the Lord. So this Pradhan, it's all basically material, and life doesn't come from the Pradhan. So it's through the glance of the Supreme Lord. So we know Sarva Yoneshu Kuntiya Murtaya Sambhavantiya Tasmat Brahmat Mahadyonir Ahambij Pradabita, that the Supreme Lord he's the seed-giving father of all living entities. So from the glance of the Supreme Lord, that's where the actual time factor comes in, and it agitates all the different ingredients, and This is from where the manifestation comes as the Prakriti. There's a different stage as well, which is called the Mahatattva. So this is the Mahatattva is where it's the differentiated. So where they actually take the different material elements from an undifferentiated stage, they start to become the differentiated. And this is the stage which is actually in the material creation. It's the root cause of the material creation, where all the universe is held within this Mahatattva. But this Mahatattva is, at this time of creation, it's without the influence of the, you know, the negative influence of the three modes of material nature. So this is a time of serenity and peace. And then the living entities, after that, they become manifested in terms of the false ego, and the intelligence and so on. So that's the Mahatattva and the creation. So it's ultimately, time has gone quicker than I expected, but ultimately there's these five gross elements, and then there's the three subtle elements, and from all these different elements come all the other elements. So these are the objects of the senses, which are taste, form, touch, sound. Yeah, taste, form, touch, sound. Sorry, I'm forgetting one, maybe. Smell, yeah. And then there's the knowledge-acquiring senses, which is like the skin, the eyes, the nose, the mouth and the tongue. And then there's the working senses. So these senses are the voice, the arms, the legs, the anus, and the genitals. So all these are they all interact with each other, and this is how the material universe works. But it starts from pure consciousness, from Lord Brahma, and ultimately we can, this is in terms of devotional service, that we can get back to that pure consciousness. So it said in the Bhagavad Gita, Pahanam Jamanamante Gyanavan Mam Prabhadyante Vasudeve Sarvamiti Samahatma Sarurbaha. So this pure consciousness is actually Vasudeva consciousness, or known as Krishna consciousness. So the Supreme Lord also expands as well, existent in the Mahatattva. So we can actually reclaim that Mahatattva consciousness, which is good, which is pure goodness. So we have the three different modes of material nature: goodness, ignorance, and passion. But we have to try and come to the stage of goodness. And not just goodness, but pure goodness. So pure goodness is goodness without any tinge of ignorance and passion. And also described in the Nectar of Devotion, that stage which is without any tinge of ignorance or passion is actually a bhava bhakti. So we have to try come to that stage of pure goodness where we can actually transcend the modes of material nature. And this is where Vasudev becomes manifest. And this is also known as Kshetragna, which is the knower of the field of activities, and also knows the super knower, which is the super soul. So and that's what we have to strive for. And also, in terms of these four different expansions of the Lord, Vasudev, Aniruddha, Pradumna, and... Sankarshan. Sorry, yeah. So, yeah, Sankarshan is, Sankarshan, if we want to actually get to Sankarshan, we have to, it's described in Srimad Bhagavatam, that we have to worship Lord Shiva. And Sankarshan is, he's represented by the snakes. So, Ultimately, to become free, we have to worship Sankarshan. And then to become free as well, it's described of mental disturbances, we have to worship Aniruddha. So and then we can become free from mental disturbances. And then also is manifested is the intelligence. And to become free from to realize that and to actually regain that, good intelligence, we have to worship Lord Brahma. So there's different functions of the intelligence. These are two. First of all is doubting. So that's one prime factor of the intelligence, to doubt, to apprehend, to misapprehend, and ultimately memory comes from the intelligence as well. And another function of the intelligence is sleeping, which means we have to have, in order to have proper intelligence, we have to have proper sleep. So a yogi who doesn't, in moderation, he doesn't eat too little and eats too less. So we're just, it's 8:30 now, so we're just going to finish up. But also in the Bhagavad Gita says, in terms of doubt, Krishna mentions to Arjuna, to become free from this doubt, we have to become equipped with the sword of knowledge. So therefore, O son of Bharat, do your duty and fight. So this is a devotional service. So, the time went a bit quicker than expected. If you've any questions, please feel free to ask our comments, our corrections. Yes, Jagat Priya Mataji, thank you.
I couldn't catch that part so well about when you spoke about Sankarshan, Pradyumna, Aniruddha. And you mentioned we should worship the different personalities. Is that also for devotees, or how do you mean to say that?
Yes, that was something which I was thinking of, but my understanding is that, as long as we follow the instructions of the spiritual master, and that, that's our main thing we need to worry about, that from the process everything will take care of itself. So I presume that maybe that these different things are from someone on a more on the Sankhya part, or someone who is not so much in the process of devotional service. That's just my understanding. Yeah. Thank you. Yes, Priyojana Prabhu. Thank you.
Also, talking about the worship and sacrifice, it says here in the Bhagavad Gita, for those who are whose minds are attached to the unmanifested impersonal feature of the Supreme, advancement is very troublesome. To make progress in that discipline is always very difficult. But those who worship me, giving up all their activities to me and being devoted to me without deviation, engaged in devotional service, are always meditating on me, having fixed their minds upon me, O son of Pritha. For them, I am the swift deliverer from the ocean of birth and death.
Thank you very much, Prabhu. So thank you very much. This is actually, it's my first class I've given on the Vyasasan. So please forgive me for any mistakes. My first morning class, and it was a mixture of happiness, anxiety, and also it was a very much an honor and a privilege. So thank you very much for your kind attention. Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki, Srivapad Ki, all glories to assembled devotees. Hare Krishna.